Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMC FM and HD1, KGMC San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Oh, it's really good to be with you. NFL schedules, yeah. I'm guessing a lot of you showed up for NFL schedules. I hope you plan on sticking around for Steve Kerr. He's going to join us live at 5:30. A very interesting conversation coming up with the Warriors head coach ahead of one of the most interesting first-round games they've had to play in a really, really long time. By the way, to really get everything correct, they were not empty net goals given up. They went to the backup last night, so that's how the Sharks lost 5-0. I'm sorry that I keep on regurgitating that 5-0 score to you when Martin Jones is only responsible for 3 of it. I don't think you're going to have to worry about much more hockey based on what I've seen so far. So, Raiders leaked about an hour ago. The opening night is against Denver. That is Sunday Night Football. Okay. So, we got notes coming up, and Cam Inman is going to join us at 6:15. He has leaked the 49ers schedule, and now, we'll go through that quickly. And I tell you what, Ray, if you could just keep an eye out for that Raiders schedule while I go through this. 49ers are looking at 2 road games to begin the year. They're at Tampa Bay and at Cincinnati. The home opener at Levi's will be in week 3 against the Steelers. Week 4 is a bye. They play on Monday Night Football for the first time this season in week 5 when they host the Cleveland Browns. Their first division game is going to come off of a short week when they head to the Los Angeles Rams in week 6. They then turn around to go to Washington in week 7. In week 8, it's the Panthers. In week 9, they're at Arizona. In week 10, they host the Seahawks. In week 11, they host the Cardinals. In week 12, they host the Packers. So they do have those 3 home games in a row. But the Packers represent a stretch of 6 brutal games to end the year for the 49ers. Week 12 against the Packers, week 13 at the Ravens, week 14 at the Saints, week 15 they host the Falcons, week 16 they host the Rams, week 17 they're up in Seattle. They play a bevy of good quarterbacks. They play at least 4 10 a.m. games going to the East Coast. And interesting stuff to glean off the first look at this schedule for the 49ers. And Cam Inman coming up at 6:15 a little bit later on this evening to discuss it in vivid detail. We're also going to be, by the way, playing a name game at 6 o'clock tonight. Anything else come out? Albie is walking in studio, which means he's about to hand me, I'm guessing, an Oakland Raiders schedule. Indeed. Monday, September 9th, they host the Denver Broncos. ESPN for you, Monday Night Football. Are they going to have a doubleheader that night?
ESPN, they typically do.
Yeah, they usually do. So ESPN, part of that Monday Night Football doubleheader. Then they host the Kansas City Chiefs. So the Raiders, they start the year with 2 AFC West opponents, the Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs. Then they're at the Minnesota Vikings. Then they're at the Indianapolis Colts. Then they're going to London to take on the Chicago Bears. And I'll tell you, if the Raiders aren't ready to go, that's 0-5. That could be 0-5 right there. It really could be. If they're not absolutely turned this ship around, ready to bang some heads week 1, that's 2 division games, tough opponents, at Minnesota, brutal road trip, at Indianapolis, that's going to be a handful, Chicago Bears in London, you're being denied, Raider fans, by the way, Khalil Mack's return to Oakland, since they have to jump how high the NFL wants. Whenever the NFL says jump, the Raiders have to do it because they're allowed to move to Las Vegas, and you miss yet another regular season home game because of it. Then you're at the Green Bay Packers. That smells like defeat. At the Houston Texans, the Detroit Lions, Los Angeles Chargers, by the way. I guess that game is that a Monday Night Football game? It's got an asterisk next to it, so it might be. Cincinnati Bengals in Oakland. Then you're at the New York Jets, at the Kansas City Chiefs. home to the Titans, home to the Jaguars, then at the Chargers, and at the Broncos. So you start the year with the Broncos, you end the year with the Broncos. Kansas City Chiefs are spread out pretty much for week two to much later on in the season, so you won't have to, like, you know, get smashed by them two times in a row quickly. Yeah, this looks like a brutal Raiders schedule. I got to be honest with you, man. This looks rough.
But they're bad, so it's always going to look like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make a case that they're the worst team in every game, but they're not going to go 0-16.
Well, they do play the Detroit Lions this year, so maybe they'll be at least as good as
the
Detroit
1-15. Lions. But that's not what I'm picking either. I mean, they're a 4-10 team because they're a 4-12 team because they're 4-12. They're unless they have one of the great drafts in the history of the NFL and come up with four starters. And I don't know that that's likely.
49ers got back-to-back road games to start the year for the first time since I was in college, 1997. So thank you, NFL scheduling gods. First road Thursday night football game since 2013. The first week four bye for the 49ers since 2002. I don't like week four bye. The Raiders also got jobbed, I think, in the bye department. Their bye is week five when they come back from London. Week six. They play the Bears in London in week five. They come back, have that, and then have, God, they got to travel to London. Then they got to travel back from London. They get a bye week. Then they got to travel to Green Bay. Then they go to Houston the week after that. That's rough, rough, rough. That is a savage schedule. And Raiders fans got to look at this and go, oh, mama, what'd we do to deserve that?
You know exactly what they did to deserve that.
I think I do.
I mean, this is part of the payback for Vegas, which is we'll be okay with you moving. We'll help you some. But you're going to go to London because we're not committed to Oakland anymore. You're going to give that up.
What are they going to, the Tottenham Hotspur? Is that how you say it right?
Tottenham
Hotspur. They got a new stadium that they're opening?
Yes. In fact, they've already opened it. They've already had a couple of games there with their premier client, the Tottenham Hotspur, who, by the way, won their Champions League quarterfinal today in a huge upset over Man City.
Does Hotspur mean something that I don't know about, or are they talking like, hey, there's a spur and don't touch it because it's hot?
No, it's it's a kind of bird.
Okay. Oh, I had no idea.
I mean, it's okay. I don't know the full etymology of it, but
I don't even know what etymology means, so I'm glad that you don't have any more to tell me because I'm confused right now.
Oh, please. You went to Indiana.
Oh, don't. Come on. The Harvard of the Plains.
You put it on the tee and you said, I don't know a word. How did you think that was going to end?
Not well for me.
Okay.
Steve Kerr joining us at 5:30. It better end well for him in Game 3 and the rest of the Warriors, because let's be totally honest. If the Warriors were to lose to the Clippers in Game 3, like, all hell breaks loose in terms of what we're talking about until they go out there and play again. And L.A. can turn around to you and say, you know, our We Believe is officially maybe taking root. Now, for We Believe to really happen, you got to finish off the upset. And 2-1 series lead is not finishing off an upset. Wounding the Warriors feels easier to do right now than killing the Golden State Warriors. I don't think that the Clippers can kill the Golden State Warriors. Talking about how what would happen if they lost, though, oh, man, it's an exercise that nobody here wants to go through. We're going to be asking Steve Kerr some, I guess, pointed questions about that defeat and how they're going to turn it around. It felt like maybe there was a little mixed message going on due to some sound bites we had earlier. Steve Kerr, when asked how he would like Kevin Durant to play in Game 3, wrapped up what he had to say about that by saying,
he can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
There you go. Shoot it more. 20, 30. I want him to get it up more.
It was a tough game. It was a tough game for him. He had 9 turnovers. It wasn't his night. But like I said, he's He's the most skilled basketball player on earth, and he's a champion, a two-time finals MVP. This guy, he'll be coming out tomorrow firing and ready to play.
Again, firing how much, Steve?
He can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
All right, here's what Kevin Durant had to say about how he plans on attacking Game 3.
I'm not going to go out there and just go shoot 20 or 30 shots. You know, I don't play like that. So, I mean, we were up 30 points, so I had 5 shots. Everybody's shots were kind of evenly distributed around that time. We were up 30. So me taking 2 more shots after that wasn't a reason why we lost.
So, it feels a little bit like a one guy said 20 to 30 would be great, and then the guy who's got to actually play says, I'm not going out there just to shoot 20 or 30 times. Look, I know he desires efficiency, but, you know, volume shooter, while the other team is coming back on you in historic fashion, yeah, maybe dial it up a little bit more than just 2 shots to try to save the day with it at the end of a basketball game. I'm not putting it all on Kevin. I'm not criticizing him top to bottom, head to tail. It's all on him. No, but Patrick Beverley, you know, halted his aggression and fouled him out of a game where he might have been able to put up a big shot or two at the end of it.
The Warriors are an ensemble when they work at their best. And you saw the example of how good they are in the first 29 minutes of that game. What happened to them was not about Kevin Durant not stepping up, or it was about an entire team, A, deciding the job was done, and B, the team that was down 31 going, well, we're just going to play hard for the hell of it then. And that's where, I mean, that's why the idea of he didn't step up just bothers me, because this was an entire collect. If they win by 5, I don't know that you're making this case. If they win by 5, we're not even looking at this game anymore. It's in the rearview mirror. It wasn't eventful. But the problem that makes this talkable is the fact that a team that was up 31 at home in the playoffs stopped playing with enough time to let a clearly inferior team on talent get back in the game simply by playing really, really hard against a team that didn't play really hard.
Would you agree that an individual's play can inspire a team to play harder?
In this case, no, because...
Do you think Patrick Beverley was a key piece in feeding the fire that allowed the Clippers to come burning back into that game?
He was a piece, but there were a lot of pieces there. Lou Williams was far more important than Patrick Beverley.
In terms
Montrezl
of scoring,
Harrell,
sure.
In terms of... If you want to talk about sparking...
Say that third quarter.
Yeah, if you want to talk about sparking a team, yeah, it was Lou Williams. And I would also suggest that Montrezl Harrell was far more instrumental than Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley's the guy we notice because we always see him trying to slide his entire torso inside Kevin Durant's shirt. But he's not the difference. The difference is the fact that the Clippers as a collective played really, really hard in a game that you wouldn't expect them to, given the fact that they were down 31 points with 17 minutes to go.
Had they won by 5 and that was the end of it, you're right, we wouldn't be talking about it. But had they won by 5 after blowing a 31 point lead, yeah, we'd be discussing that.
Not in the same way.
No, of course not.
I mean, and not only not in the same way, it wouldn't be Kevin Durant didn't step up. A lot of guys didn't step up. They all played poorly to the extent that they played at all. That's my point. It's just people criticized Durant when he was taking too many shots earlier in the year. All right. Now he's not taking enough. And I would suggest that it's not about the number of shots he takes. It's how he is integrated in a greater offense. And they were integrated completely fine through up until 7:31 in the third quarter. They were up by 31 by not asking people to shoot a lot. I don't believe that this was a loss because nobody stepped up. It's that they all chose not to step up. There's a difference.
Kevin Durant went on to say that his battle with Patrick Beverley can't be what defines game three. They've got to get back to team ball and all of that good stuff. And then he also said,
when I get the ball in my spots, you know, I got to pest Patrick Beverley, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation. But we got a guy that's dropping and helping, and then we got another guy that's just sitting on me waiting for me to dribble the basketball. I put the basketball on the floor, you know, I could probably make 43% of my shots if I shoot them like that. But that's not really going to do nothing for us with the outcome of the game, you know, because we got a nice flow. Everybody touching the rock, everybody shooting and scoring. So I'm not going to get in the way of the game because, you know, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverley. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am.
That's great. By the way, if that doesn't sound like he's calling for a 40-piece tomorrow, I don't know why he's being shy about coming out and shooting. Look, I put it on, you know, Kevin to shoot more in a fourth quarter when things are going bad, because things are going bad because all of a sudden everybody else is not shooting well.
It's not that they're not shooting. They're not running the offense at all.
Well, then
that's
that
the
is,
point.
That is a tailor-made situation for him to take over.
No, but if they're running the offense.
You just said they weren't.
No. I said if they are running the offense, then it's not incumbent on Kevin Durant to get a bunch of shots.
Right.
It's not. To me, the Warriors have debunked the notion that one guy is responsible for taking the big shot late in a game. The Warriors are the example of our offense is constructed so that one of three or four guys can take that shot, and we are equally in position to succeed.
Right, but Clay's
that's
been,
my point.
But Clay's been hard to find here in the second half. Curry is
then
what,
why aren't
two
we, then
for
why,
seven.
Then why aren't we screaming about either of them?
Because heavy is the head that wears the crown, Ray.
No, he's not. Curry's the head that wears the crown to the extent that any of them do. The whole point of the Warriors is that there is no crown. The crown is the collective. And the Warriors won in 15 because they were a collective. They won in 17 because they were even larger collective. Why would they not be a collective now? This was not a failure of anything other than as a collective. They stopped playing because they thought the job was done. That's it. All the other overthinking is just stuff to amuse us because there's 2 days between games.
Is that Steve Kerr's failure then?
No, it's their failure as players. Because they all stopped. They all stopped. And he made substitutions. There were good there were starters on the floor when this started. And he said, okay, well, you know, we're up by 20. He handled it the way they handle every other route. And nobody ever screams that Steve Kerr has failed when they're up by 30 and they only win by 12. The difference here is that they never got it back. And it wasn't a substitution or series of substitutions. It was that they stopped playing, and all of a sudden, they couldn't get it back. And that's on the players, because this was not about anything other than, we think this is done. The other team doesn't, but we don't know it yet.
888-957-9570. Brian, Palo Alto. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Excellent.
I would agree wholeheartedly with Ray, which is not the norm, but, you know, the
everybody prefaces this.
It's hard to say.
I hate agreeing with you, but
Curry wears the crown. Curry scored 4 points in the second half. Draymond scored 0 points in the second half. And Durant is getting savaged by the local media. And it's like, is it any wonder this guy wants to get the hell out of here?
But here's the deal. Curry hit his big three. Curry did. Like, he came in,
shot.
He hit a big shot.
One shot.
So, well, you know what? Kevin Durant hit one shot, too, and fouled out.
Hey, Dave, do you know what the opponent, the guys that Steph guarded in the game, do you know what they shot against him when he was the primary defender?
I don't have that in front of me.
75%.
I'm sure an awful lot of that was Lou Williams. I don't know how many shots, though, you know, they got off on Steph. I don't have those advanced stats in front of me. He was in foul trouble. How many times was he guarding the shooter? So I don't even know.
More importantly, the caller makes a different point that I think I didn't highlight enough. Defensively, they were an atrocity. They were awful. I mean, 85 points in the second half against anybody is an indication we're done.
Yeah.
And that's everybody. That's not just Kevin Durant. It's not just Stephen Curry. That's why I keep saying this was a team failure. It's not a team collapse. They haven't collapsed. But they failed to play 48. They failed to play 36. And most of the time you can get away with that if you build up a big enough lead. They didn't do that this time. And they paid for it. Now we'll see if they have to keep paying for it.
My biggest concern, honestly, going into Game 3, is if they let Patrick Beverley play Durant that physically at Oracle, what's it going to be like down at Staples Center? And Durant, he's just looking to have it called both ways. It's all he's asking for.
When he run up on me like a pit bull, grab me, hold me, I don't mind it. That's how he make his money. That's how he feed his family. But if I throw something back, then let us play. You get what I'm saying? So I got 4 or 5 offensive fouls like that. I'm just trying to figure out, each possession, how I could be more effective without getting offensive fouls.
Yeah, Durant's having trouble playing defense because he's picking up offensive fouls every time down the court. You got Patrick Beverley who can basically pants him on any possession and no whistle, no call at all. Durant's just saying, look, if he's going to be physical with me, let me be physical with him and don't hold it against me because I'm 2 feet taller than the guy.
If he's trying to be physical with Patrick Beverley, he's missing the point. All right. There are ways to get open. If you watch them play against each other, just one on one, and you don't think Kevin Durant is going to own him 10 times out of 9, you're nuts.
9 turnovers, 8 shots.
Okay. That said, he can get open. They can find ways to get him open.
Do it.
He doesn't. Okay. But what I'm saying is Patrick Beverley is not the reason why he had 8 shots. It's Patrick Beverley and then the help that comes after that. The Warriors' great failing here is that with their starters on the floor, they have 2 guys who aren't respected as shooters, so they don't get guarded. And that means that you can help like crazy on the other 3. And the Clippers are defensively a team that not only is good at help, they like to help. Because they're not going to, run up 135 on you all the time. I mean, and especially against this team. They committed to defending them over and over again by committing to defending the 3 guys that they know can hurt them and leaving the other 2 guys to say, go ahead, if you beat us, you beat us.
Steve Kerr joins us in about, 10 minutes from right now. We're really looking forward to that.
I'm going to change the subject here just a second.
Please
It occurs to me. I'm looking at the Raiders schedule, and I can't believe I'm diving into this.
See,
they're playing against the in LA against the Chargers at 10 a.m. on the 23rd of December.
What?
I'm looking at game times. They say it's TBD on your printout, but I go on the NFL site. It says 10 a.m.
Do you think that might be a typo?
I hope not. I hope they have to play at 10 a.m.
That would be unbelievable if there were a 10 a.m. kickoff.
It'd be awesome.
For that game.
It would be absolutely fabulous.
Wow. Okay. It's got to be a typo. There's no way the NFL would allow the Raiders to take place in an experiment happening just for them on the West Coast. That's got to be a typo by somebody on NFL Network, NFL.com.
All right. I'm looking at it right now. It's a Monday night. It's a Monday, and there are 3 games, and 2 of the. In fact, the 49er game, according to this, is also 10 o'clock local time. And maybe I don't. Maybe it's a typo, but there it says 1 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. 10 o'clock local.
So very interesting.
They're gonna. If it's a typo, they have to fix it.
Yeah, we will.
That just jumped out at me.
That is a situation worth monitoring. I'm glad you brought it up. We will keep an eye on it. We will put our ear on Steve Kerr, who joins us courtesy of Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. Coming up in just a moment, we're gonna have a name game at 6 o'clock, and we got a cool prize. If you like video games, MLB The Show 19 is out right now, bringing you the best of baseball. MLB The Show 19 features new game modes, expanded team building, an extensive personalized RPG experience. It's rated E for everyone, and we're going to put it up for grabs for whoever can identify the athlete We're looking for someone with a first name and a last name, and that is coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. The man who leaked early the 49ers schedule is Cam Inman. He joins us at 6:15. We're looking forward to all of that here on a Warriors Wednesday, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since the Deuce Deuce, baby, and by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Steve Kerr joins us coming up next. Right now, Elena will let you know what's going on in and around the world here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Fantastic to have you back here on 95.7 The Game. Thanks so much for hanging out with us this afternoon. Ray Ratto is along with us, and right now we're very happy to say Steve Kerr, Warriors head coach, is along with us. Steve, we thought we were going to be talking to you on Friday. We're very happy to talk to you today. Obviously, it's been a weird 24 hours. That was such an unexpected defeat, and you, I'm sure, have watched the tape. What did you see on that tape, Steve? And welcome. Thank you for joining us. What did you see that bothered you the most?
I think we just sort of disconnected, you know, mid-third quarter. When we got up 31, we just, you know, to that point, we had played brilliant defense all throughout game one, and then, you know, for 2.5 quarters of game two, and then it looked like all of a sudden it was like a preseason game in Bakersfield. Like, what happened? We just stopped playing defense, and you can't do that, you know, in a playoff game against a good team like the Clippers, and so all of a sudden it becomes a shootout. And we had foul trouble, you know, our rotations get altered, and the momentum just swung wildly the other way.
Losing focus has been a theme this year for the Warriors, and it's understandable. It really is in the regular season. This is the postseason, and it's unforgivable then when you lose focus, when all 48 minutes should be played like the score wasn't even being kept. You know, that's what fans want. That's what you and your coaching staff want. Is there anything you and your staff can do to inject moments of urgency, like just have a whistle, and if you sense them losing focus, you start blowing the whistle like it's a shark warning at a beach or something?
Well, that's what timeouts are for. So we tried to, inject some just alertness in the timeouts, like, hey, there's a long way to go. And, you know, but as I said, in an NBA game, once you lose momentum, it's tough to get it back. And the Clippers played great. You know, Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams had it going. And you know, we had a couple shots late that would have sealed it we couldn't make. But, you know, I didn't particularly like the play I drew up out of the timeout late in the game. And so, I didn't think any of us were really on our games, you know, that second half. And it's disappointing, but... You know, it's 1-1, so there's plenty of basketball left.
Do you have sort of a statute of limitations on how long you can reference this to the players before you get off it and assume that they've got the lessons learned?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you don't want to keep referencing a game, you know, for too long, because you got, you know, the next one starts and that becomes the important one. So the statute of limitations probably runs to tomorrow night at 7:30, you know, so we'll have a shoot around tomorrow in the morning and we may reference the game then. But after that, you know, you just move on to the next one.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr. And look, we want to move on to the next one too. We want to talk about how you plan on attacking game three and how you hope to see Kevin come out in game three. I know you today said, you know, 20, 30 shots, let's see it. He, talking to the media either right before you or after you, said, you know, I'm not about 20, 30 shots. That's not necessarily what I've been doing. He gets ejected in game one. He fouls out of game two, you know, 9 turnovers to outpace his shots taken. Is that Kevin's choices, or is that Patrick Beverley?
I think Beverley's done a good job on him, but I think Kevin would be the first one to tell you that was not his best game. I mean, he had a lot of turnovers and fouls, and so as far as the field goal attempts, you know, for the entire time that he's been here, Kevin, Clay, Steph all average 17, 18 shots a game. And in a playoff game, you expect your best players to be even more aggressive because they're the ones who are able to get good shots when the defense is not allowing any good ones out of your offense. And so I think we need him to be aggressive, and I think he will be. I know that he likes, being a dual threat as a scorer and a passer offensively, and he's really good at that. But generally he reads the game and whatever's necessary. I mean, you've watched him in the playoffs the last couple of years. When he's at an advantage, he's gone at people. He's been finals MVP twice in a row. So he understands that when he's got to attack and when he's got to assert himself. And so when the time's right, he'll do that.
In what ways will the Clippers try to play differently at home than they did in Oakland, if there are any? I mean, or do we already know what they are and who they are?
Well, I think they've gained some confidence now with that win. I mean, that's the problem when you let somebody off the hook, all of a sudden, there's some belief there. So they played really well down the stretch and took care of business, and now they're heading home. So I think they'll be more confident, and they'll be more excited. They're now thinking, all right, we can do this, and so our challenge gets tougher. They're going to play better. I think they'll play better at home.
Definitely want to create a little bit more of an optimistic tone here, but we still got one more thing that absolutely sucks to talk about. And it's DeMarcus Cousins. I feel so bad for him, Steve. I'm sure you do, too. How's he holding up? How's your team holding him up?
Well, he's crushed, as he should be. I mean, you think about what DeMarcus went through all last year, recovering from that Achilles injury. And he's been waiting to play in the playoffs his whole career. And, one game in, 5 minutes in, that's it. And it was really sad. I mean, I feel horrible for him. And, the good news is it's not an injury that's going to hurt him long term. He should be fine in a couple of months and should do well in free agency. But this is not, what he signed up for. He wanted a long playoff run, and I wanted to enjoy that with him. And it's just a real shame.
Have you felt the need to talk to him a lot about this, or is he happier when you just leave him be at a time like this?
I think in the immediate aftermath, most players don't want to talk to anybody. You just want to go home and get away. That's what DeMarcus has done. He wasn't in practice today. I didn't expect him to be there. And I've texted him, and we'll connect soon. But right now, I think he's just trying to get away.
If I told you a month and a half ago that Andrew Bogut would be starting a playoff game for you, you would have laughed me off the phone, Steve. I mean, it's unbelievable that we've come full circle right back to Bogut, or full boomerang in this case.
Yeah, it's we wouldn't have been able to envision this, but. When we started talking to him and his agent about this possibility, this was exactly what we had in mind, that this gives us depth at the center position. And if something does go wrong, if we get an injury, having Bogut would just be a coup for us because you just don't find guys like him, in terms of free agency or, just making a trade for another player. And so we got a guy who is a big-time player. He's a champion. He fits our system. He knows the league. So we're lucky to have him.
So if he was that important, why didn't you guys get him before?
He didn't want to be here, Ray. He wanted to play for the Sydney Kings.
Well, okay. Then, has Bob Myers failed in impressing upon him that the Sydney Kings are not as important as the Golden State Warriors?
Ray, do we have to do this?
No, we really don't. I mean, I don't want to talk about Monday night anymore. Thursday sort of okay. Let's try this. Is game four the pivotal game that's going to basically determine this series, or is it tomorrow night? I mean, because somebody's going to be up 2-1 one way or the other, but it seems to me that game four is where the tale will be told.
You know, I think if you're analyzing everything, you know, that it's a solid take. Let me put it that way. You know, generally speaking, in a 2-1 series, game four is critical. But we've been on both sides of that. You know, we won a series when we were down 3-1. We lost a series when we were up 3-1. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in any of that. I just feel like we just have to go out and play aggressively and solidly. And if we do that, I think we'll be in great shape. And I like our chances against anybody in a 7-game series because over time, I think our talent will show and our will. And I believe in these guys. They've won 3 championships, and they've been through everything. They've seen everything. So I like our chances whether we're up 2-1 or down 2-1.
Will there be a little more trust extended to Steph to play with a fourth foul if he finds himself in foul trouble in 3 quarters, game 3?
Well, everything is circumstantial, you know. But if he has 4 fouls with 8 minutes left in the 3rd quarter again, I'm taking him out again. I mean, that's especially if we're up 25. So what we want to do is avoid foul trouble. And Steph's got to do a better job. He knows that of his, you know, ill-advised reaching is just killing him because he doesn't need to do that. And he's much more important to us than 2 points for the opposition. So I told him, you know, if you're beat, show your hands, don't reach. Maybe a big block's a shot, and if they score, they score. But we need you out on the floor,
Steve. How hard is it to maintain rhythm in a game where we're stopping like every 30 seconds to shoot free throws? And I'm not asking you to criticize officials here, but just how much does a free throw heavy game affect the tone your team goes out there to set?
I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's part of strategy sometimes in the playoffs, and it's definitely something that the Clippers are trying to do. You know, we shot 45 free throws. So it's not like the refs weren't calling them. They called plenty of them.
Yeah, almost too many.
The reality is what's that?
I thought too many. It's the playoffs. Half these things should just be let them play. Everyone's allowed to play with a little emotion and anger, and it's the playoffs. Let them play.
Well, that's another view. So if you think of it that way, if you're a coach, and Pat Riley used to do this with the Knicks and Chuck Daly with the Pistons, then you tell your players, you know, just foul every time because, you know, if you're really physical and you know how to kind of get away with stuff, you do that in the playoffs because the refs aren't going to want to call too many fouls because the reality is if they called it like it was a regular season, they would call a foul on almost every play. There's 2 different sets of rules, one in the regular season, one in the postseason. And the league probably wouldn't want to hear me say that, but it's the truth. So you have to adapt and adjust, and that's what we try to do.
Without getting you any closer to being in trouble with the league, is that truer with younger officials? Because one of the things about this group of officials in the first round is that they're younger and they're less experienced. Do you think that as a result, that every series seems to have more fouls called this time than last year or the year before? Are you sensing that might be an issue?
To be honest, I haven't paid any attention to the fouls in any other games. Things differ from one game to the next. So I don't really, like I said, I don't worry about it. We just go and play, and we try to do what we do, and then you just see what happens.
You guys in L.A. right now, or are you taking off tomorrow?
Yeah, we're here in L.A., we got here a couple hours ago.
So presumably you have something scheduled for Friday night, which is why you're talking to us now.
Would you like to go down the list of my schedule for the next few nights?
No, I was just trying to figure out why, you know, you would rather kill half an hour on a Wednesday night than a Friday night.
You know, I think...
Raymond told me it would be easier for you guys to do it tonight than Friday, and I am always trying to do what's easiest for you because I'm selfless.
Let me just say... Let me just say, I felt...
Is that the least honest thing you've said this year?
Yes. Absolutely. The Raymond part was true. And it's Wednesday, and I'm just here, so I told Raymond, let's do it.
The phone has never sounded better.
Friday.
The phone's never sounded better, Steve. I got to tell you that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I think the phrase, let's get this stupidity over with now,
all right, well,
came up at some point.
We'll do it quickly here. Did you get to talk to your best friend, Tiger Woods, after the Masters?
Unfortunately, we haven't spoken, but man, was that amazing. It was so fun to watch.
It really, really was. There was a fun article that I saw online today about how Michael Jordan didn't have many miscalculations in his career. But the article was about the Michael Jordan cologne. Steve, how did the Michael Jordan cologne go over in the Bulls locker room?
I'm not even aware that was a thing.
It was a thing. You don't have your own bottle right now? You're not wearing it tonight?
Maybe.
Can I mail you $20 if you don't tell us?
Sure.
By the way, the best-selling new fragrance of 1996, even though everyone laughed at it, Jordan sold $40 million in cologne in 7 weeks, and then it was pulled quickly.
You gotta be kidding
me. Yeah, no, he did very well. And by the way, $40 million in 96, that was a lot of money, Steve.
Kind of a lot now, too.
Yeah. In all of your career, in all that you've done, especially now I think it's safe to say that your profile as a coach has eclipsed other profiles of your playing days. What is the dumbest product endorsement you've ever been asked or pitched?
Honestly, and I'm not trying to be modest, I don't know that anybody's ever asked me to pitch a product.
You're kidding.
I don't think so.
Maybe you're just not sincere enough.
You got
to
go.
I think somebody asked me to do a car commercial one time, maybe.
I could see you doing like board shorts or like Vans or something.
Yes. Yes.
It's got Kerr written all over it. Seriously. I mean, you should say, do you know who I am? Kevin Durant dropped that today.
I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am.
I'm Steve Kerr. You know who I am, and I'm here for Vans.
I like it.
Hey, you're.
I would do a van. I would absolutely do a Vans endorsement any time.
There you go. Let's set that up. And can I get a finder's fee on that? 5%.
Yeah, you'll get a pair of Vans.
Yeah, two lefts.
Yeah. Maybe I'd be lucky enough to get autographed. Steve, you are a kind and patient man for dealing with the both of us. I appreciate that today, and I wish you good luck in Game 3, where I think the Golden State Warriors are set to come out with a brass knuckles performance. Do you feel that same way? You guys rebound and circle the wagons like everybody. Like nobody, I mean.
We'll be ready to play.
I like that. Coach, thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks. Take care.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game.
That's 20 minutes he can't get back.
Vans, if you're listening and you don't have somebody on the phone to that guy right now, you're not doing it right. I thought he was really, really forward with, first of all, it's hard to hear a not happy to be talking to you, Steve Kerr. He plays the part, Ray. I agree with you. He doesn't want to be doing this, but he does this better than anyone else that has ever done this. He really is always affable and phenomenal. And you could still feel the Game 2 loss and the DeMarcus Cousins injury lingering just in the tone of his voice. This has weighed on them a little bit. It has. It absolutely has.
I think... The Cousins thing will linger more than Game 2. Not because Cousins is vital to their winning. He's helpful to it. But, you know, he was clearly an ancillary piece. But knowing what he went through, knowing how much they like him, I think that's one that, you know, the first time they see him when he comes back, you know, maybe in the next round, whenever he comes back, that's going to be another jolt to the system. Because once again, it's him with, you know, a cast or a, you know, some sort of crutches or something. And they're going to be reminded of it again. I mean, that's the thing. In human terms, that's going to bother him way more than coughing up game two of a series that they'll probably win in five or six.
Warriors Wednesday, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922, and by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. All of our playoff coverage here on 95.7 The Game, also presented by Great Clips. So we're really, really looking forward to bringing you Game 3 tomorrow. Game 4 will be on Sunday. That is a 12:30 start time. We do not have, at least I have not got in front of me, what tip times will be beyond that for the remainder of this series. We do have NFL schedules for the very first time this year. It feels a little bit like a fool's errand to try to go through these things and pick out the wins and losses, but there are really three reasons that I think make the schedule release something that you got to pay at least a little bit of attention to. How many East Coast games is a West Coast team traveling to? How many great quarterbacks are you going to be playing, barring injury? That guy's great, no doubt about it. Who is coaching against you? This especially matters if you think you got the better coach in the matchup. If you think, you know, it's Kyle Shanahan's world and every other coach is living in it, well, you're going to like an awful lot of those coaching matchups. If you believe in Gruden's X's and O's, you might like a lot of his coaching matchups. I will say this, the Raiders' schedule, as always, feels a little more brutal than most. This one fits that mold per usual. We have an awful lot to talk about with the 49ers schedule coming up with Cam Inman. 6:15 tonight, we're going to get into the details of the 49ers schedule as well. The Raider thing that I want to get back to, though, Ray, the team is going to play four of its final six games on the road for the third time in franchise history. They're also going to spend six consecutive weeks not playing at the Coliseum between weeks 3 through week 8. They don't have a game at the Coliseum. Their home game is going to be in London against the Chicago Bears, and there's also a bye week in there. So that's a really long time to not play a home game. Jeez.
Well, it's got nothing to do with home game. It's got everything to do with Oakland game.
Right.
I mean, they're anticipating that at some point this fan base will become angry. And it hasn't really happened yet.
It's astonishing to me.
Well, no, I think
49er fans were more upset about a coach getting fired than Raider fans are about their team relocating.
No, but 49er fans also, when confronted with the bad football they've gotten the last several years, don't come out. And to a certain extent, Raider fans have probably come out to a greater percentage than 49er fans have. So apathy takes a lot of different forms. But I think Raider fans have processed this for a much longer time. And they're used to the idea, but when it gets real, they're not going to be happy on any level at all, which is why I'm not surprised that their last home game is in week 15. And it's against Jacksonville, which is basically a, quote, nothing opponent in terms of national or local reputation.
Low profile game.
Yeah. So the NFL is trying to ease its passage out of Oakland as best it can. So, you know, without overtly screwing the Raiders by basically saying, well, you're going to play 14 games on the road. They basically said there is going to be as little exposure to Oakland as possible and as non-meaningful a situation as possible, just because this is the last year in that town.
There you go. Chilton Autobody text line might have hit the nail right on the head when it says, Damon, I'm more pissed still about the Khalil Mack trade than them relocating. There you go. Let me tell you, you want to talk about importance of NFL schedules? Next year, it'll be even more important to you, I guess, Bay Area Raider fans, because you're going to need to know what weeks you got to buy a plane ticket to go root for your favorite team if you want to do so in person. We've got an awful lot coming up next hour, a chock full 6 o'clock hour, which is going to begin with a little name game this afternoon. We're going to do that in just a little bit. As a matter of fact, you can call right now and get in line for today's name game. I'm not given a single clue for today's name game. Not one. Not a single clue. So, if you want to get in line right now, it's 888-957-9570 to play the name game. And what are we looking for? We're looking for an athlete with two first names. That's it. Someone once said, Damon Bruce, you got two first names. I said, no, I got two last names. See, my door swings both ways in the name game. But we're looking for someone with two first names from the world of sports. And today, we're playing the name game for the MLB, for MLB The Show, which is out right now. MLB The Show, exclusive to PlayStation. It's a Sony game. It's The Show 19. I went out and bought this already. I've been playing it. It's awesome. It's maybe the best baseball video game of all time. It's really, really fantastic. We're playing for a copy of MLB The Show. You can win it if you're the winner of the name game, 888-957-9570. And the deal is you call in with a question or a straight-up guess, right? But you're going to want to give a clue or two. If you get a yes, means you can ask another question. If you get a no, we're going to hang up on you and go to the next caller. That's the way it is. We're playing the name game, and we're doing it next for MLB The Show here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.